Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and that was a small selection from the classic hit Money by Pink Floyd. And today we're talking with a money expert, sort of someone that has empowered women over the years to make smart financial decisions. I happen to be in a class that Suzanne Gelman taught and, of course, coordinated, called the Women Financial Series through the University of Missouri Extension Office, and this was the most impressive class, the most practical class I've taken in my life. It was just 5 weeks long, but it taught us so many different things. We're going to talk about the Women Financial Series here in a minute, but first I want to welcome Suzanne Gelman to Alive to Thrive. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, Brenda.
Oh, well, I'm so glad we were able to squeeze this in. I know you are constantly running back and forth between St. Louis and St. Peter's and throughout Missouri, empowering women through financial literacy and through the classes you coordinate. But we specifically wanted to talk with you today about, you know, a little bit about your personal background, how you got into this and why you're passionate. You've been doing this for a number of years, about, what, 15 years you've been running the program?
Oh, maybe closer to 18, 19.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh. Well, tell us a little bit about your background, because you've had an interesting background. You have a law degree, and, you know, you chose to walk away from a six-digit income to work for a university and lead these classes. So tell us a little bit about how you made that decision and over the years, many years ago. I guess it's been now 20 years, so...
You know, I have a background, my undergrad and my master's are in consumer economics, so it's personal finance based, and I came from a family where my father was successful professionally, but he was terrible with money, and my grandmothers were really good with money, so I watched what happened to my dad that didn't go well, and watched what happened with my grandmothers and learned from them what did go well, and that provided a lot of my background. You know, I tried to learn from my dad's mistakes of always spending more than he earned, and tried to learn from my grandmothers who, you know, had lived through the Depression about things that did, and tried to find a balance, which I think is, that's all, money is all about balance.
Oh, I think that is neat that you learned from your grandmothers, because typically most women learn about financial management from their husbands or their brothers or their father, some male figure in their life, and here it was the female, the elder female women in your family line. But what are some of the mistakes women make in terms of, you know, not learning from someone in their family and trying to, you know, giving away their financial power to someone else, their spouse or someone else in their life?
Well, I think you've really said it. Is that a lot of times, for whatever reason, men seem to be more interested in the finances, but not always. Both of my grandmothers handled the finances in their family. My dad handled the finances in ours not very well. But I think what it is that, you know, just wherever the family of origin that they came from, how they handled it, and a lot of times that may have been the father who may have been the primary breadwinner handling the money. I think a lot of us look at the way things were handled by others, and we just assume that's okay, and we don't think about whether or not what I sometimes call the money baggage, things that we learned when we were young, saw, and don't necessarily question. We just accept it, and that's something that I think that we often have to look at changing. It just because that's the way it was done, does that mean that that's the way that we should continue to do it, or that makes sense for us? You know, nowadays, between the rate of divorce, the fact that women are, you know, many women are widowed, many women never marry now. You know, there's generally in most women's lives going to be a point where they need to manage the money. And so even if they choose not to take the full responsibility of it earlier, you know, if they're married, it's really wise to understand what's going on. Doesn't mean you have to take over, but to understand what's going on, to be able to communicate about money, and, you know, and play some sort of role, at least as a partner.
Mm-hmm. I love that you say money baggage, because if you look at when someone first starts looking at their own financial habits, and you look back, you know, in my case, I was raised by a single mother, and literally she kept the bills and the invoices and the receipts in a brown paper grocery bag. You know, that was her filing system. And I don't know how she did it, because she had four kids to raise on her own. And, you know, having left a traditional marriage, she had to learn how to manage the household finances, bring in income, pay the expenses. You know, somehow we all got to college. You know, so what are some of the life transitions that women face, like divorce, that they need to be prepared for ahead of time, in terms of perhaps having a checking account with their name on it, or credit, you know, establishing credit and things like that?
I mean, I think it's important for women to establish their own financial lives, no matter whether they're working or not. I mean, a marriage is a partnership, for example, or if they're on their own. You know, and if they are on their own but then end up getting married, I really encourage women to keep their own financials. I mean, not that everything has to be separate, but just always having a credit card in their own name and a bank account that's just in their own name that no one can take away, no one can drain the money from, you know, unless there's, of course, you know, some financial lawsuit, but, you know, in general, that where they have some power over, you know, decisions without having to explain those to anyone. I mean, I actually believe that of men too. I think even if there's even if they're joint accounts, I truly believe that each individual should have some of their own money that they don't have to account for to anyone, whether it's buying gifts or, I mean, frankly, in my own marriage, it keeps our marriage healthier that even though we have joint accounts, that we each have our own account, because I'm more of a saver. My husband's a saver, but he's more of a spender than I am. And so that keeps our fighting to a minimum, what I don't have to see sometimes when he's buying things that I think are, you know, useless.
So each person can have a discretionary account.
Exactly.
And that gives them a sense of independence within the relationship, and does prevent a lot of squabbles over things that are kind of small in the scheme of things, but that sense of independence, and that also emergency funds, if you need to get to some money quick for some reason, to help someone, or if something comes up in your own life, you have access to it right away. So tell us about...
Yeah, an emergency fund in that, by the way. I'm sorry to interrupt, but just also having not just your own spending money, but having some emergency money that is yours. Yes.
And what's the recommended amount to have set aside?
Well, I mean, that it's hard to say. I mean, in general, when we tell people about, to have emergency funds, it's what I tell people is to start out reaching for a 500 or a 1,000. I know that a lot of these, experts say 9 months, but the majority of Americans may not even have, 1 or 2 months. So, eventually, and ultimately $500 or $1,000, then maybe working up to a month of expenses, then 3 months of expenses, then four, working up a little at a time, even though the numbers say 6 to 9 months, that's just not realistic for many people to think that big. It's better to say, many emergencies can be handled, for $1,000 or $2,000. So working up to that amount and then just keep going. I mean, I tell people, make your emergency buildup or your rainy day fund or whatever you choose to call it a monthly expense for yourself, where no matter, because you're always dipping in and using it. Emergencies always happen. So try to make that a permanent condition, a permanent plan for yourselves by just making sure that every month you're putting money aside for those unexpecteds.
And so a practical way to do that is to perhaps have a payroll deduction that goes directly to a savings account, or just writing yourself a check, and which might be a little bit harder for people to discipline themselves every week to put X amount aside, or even just starting taking an old coffee can. I know I did this with different trips I wanted to take. I had a coffee can, and anytime I sold something or saved some money, I got a refund. Unexpected income is what we like to call it, and you just stick it in that can or stick it in that bank account, and it will add up quickly over time.
That's good too, but the more automatic, because that, of course, the unexpected income, then that's not, it's not as strategic as we'd like.
Okay.
What's better is what you initially said, which is to have most employers will direct deposit into at least three different places. So regular checking and savings, maybe retirement account, that might not even be included. But I suggest to people they consider opening a separate account that's earmarked. This is emergencies or big ticket goals, and the money goes in there. Maybe there's no debit card, no electronic, usage other than the automatic deposits, so that it's less prone to impulse spending, or but even being earmarked helps people stop, help prevent some of the impulse spending away. But if they don't have an employer that can direct deposit, then they can have their bank or credit union each time their paycheck hits. Because I suggest to people too, think about it per paycheck. I think that's an easy way, because that's when cash is coming in. Pay yourself first. As soon as your paycheck hits, have it direct deposited into this, separate account. Or, again, have your employer direct deposit, a certain amount per paycheck. And it makes it easy. You don't see it, especially if, and you could try to increase it over time. Each time you get a pay raise, try to increase the amount you add, because you're not used to spending that money. Don't get used to it. Use those types of things, or at least a portion of them, to try and build up your savings.
I think that's really great, and I think most people do not know that you can have up to three different payroll deductions, three different accounts set up off your paycheck. And then if you're not getting a regular paycheck, doing it through your credit union or your bank, that they can automatically transfer X amount every 2 weeks or once a month to a separate account, that you do not carry that debit card. Those are all great tips. So, let's get back to your personal story, Suzanne. I like my audiences to understand who our guests are and how they navigated certain choices in life. And so what prompted you to leave a very well-paying job in law as a lawyer to go work in the nonprofit sector?
Well, let's see. Okay, so I guess there's a misunderstanding there. I actually had gotten my master's before I went to law school, and so
okay.
I was looking at getting a joint PhD law, joined a joint PhD law program, and I got recruited into a job with the university, instead, which was a relief because I was a little burned out after my thesis. And then I went back to law school, left for a little bit to work in the attorney general, to do some work in the attorney general's office, and said I really liked working for the university, so I really just expanded the job after that. So I did not.
Excellent.
Now, I made the choice because I chose not to go for one of those job opportunities and chose to stay with the university and expand what I was doing. But that, that was a choice not to take something that was going to yield a much greater income. But that goes back to what I tell people is you need to examine your values. When you're thinking about setting financial goals for yourself and how to handle your money, if you don't step back and think about the things that are most valuable to you internally, that often don't even have a particular money attached to them, I think sometimes people end up heading off in the wrong direction. So, a few years ago, my husband and I actually did an activity where we each, wrote down our top five values. And one of mine was flexibility. And, of course, law firms, no matter how much they pay me, weren't going to be very flexible. So one of the reasons that I chose this direction was because one of my top values is flexibility and giving back. And so that to me, no matter how much income I earned, it wouldn't be able to be enough to give up those values. I would never have been satisfied, no matter how much someone paid me, if I lost the flexibility. Does that make sense?
Totally, because I made that choice myself recently.
When you're thinking about money choices, it's not just about, how much you spend on things, but it's also, choices in terms of how much you earn and then as a result. So I think, people could take jobs that are highly paying, but if they're giving up something that's valuable and they haven't really stepped back to think about that, then that job and that income isn't going to make them any happier.
That is so true. And myself and my partner just made those decisions recently and we're pursuing our dreams to open our own little business and a gift shop on Main Street, St. Charles, and, I think it was in part due to taking the class with the Women Financial Series that, in discussing habits and values and choices that, we started putting all that together. And I do want to talk about the Women Financial Series. So when you went to work for the University of Missouri, we want to explain to our listeners, those that are not from Missouri, University of Missouri is based in Columbia, Missouri, but they have an extension office in St. Peter's. And have you always been with the St. Peter's location, Suzanne?
No, I actually started in a rural area. I'm from St. Louis, but I started in a more rural area when I started with the university and then moved back to the St. Louis area when I knew I was going to, I had taken the LSAT, my scores were going to expire, and I was going to law school, so.
Okay. So the University of Missouri, it's based in Columbia, and then they have extension offices in all over the state, or?
Almost every county in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Really? Okay, I didn't even know that. And so.
Now, they don't all have a financial person in them. So, for example, different counties have different, but 4-H is part of it, University of Missouri Extension. Various offices will have horticulture or agriculture specialists, nutrition specialists, human development specialists that work with child care providers, small business development specialists to help people start and grow their businesses. So they are stationed, it's varied so that because you can't have, resources don't allow for every kind of specialist to be in every office, but there's usually one within a county or so of each county there's someone nearby.
So your specialty was consumer economics, and then did you create the Women's Financial Series?
Well, so originally when I was early on with the university, AARP had started a program called the Women's Financial Information Program. And it was different but similar. We did this program in partnership with AARP years and years ago, and it was set up where there was a speaker and then breakout sessions, which participants never loved as much. Well, eventually AAR, so we did that program in our own form as long as AARP sponsored it, and eventually they stopped, and so we then were in the process of developing a national curriculum anyway around financial education. So we used that material to create the resources for the Women's Financial and change the name and also change the format. But AARP's idea for doing a series like this for women really was the, you know, what led into the program as it is today.
Oh, fantastic. And so there is a St. Louis class and a St. Charles class at the St. Charles Community College. So this has been going on for, what, 15 years, you said, or 18 years, or how many years?
Oh, yes, at least. Well, so when I was in the rural Missouri, I was doing it. And then when I came back to St. Louis, I started doing it with the Older Women's League that just went out of existence about a year ago. But we've been doing it in the St. Louis area ever since, so around, I'd say, 1995, 96.
So for our listeners who... for our listeners who aren't familiar, it's a five-week class, 3 hours a night for 5 weeks, and various instructors. So tell us a little bit how you pick your instructors. How do you find the women to teach the various sections on the various topics that are covered?
Well, I generally do the first night just because of trying to get to know the participants and just the way I want it organized on just getting financially organized, setting financial goals, looking at our values, our money personalities, all that. That's the first night. And then I work with a coalition of women that includes someone from the United Way, the library districts, Connections to Success, YWCA, just a lot of different organizations. And so over in the years, they've worked with me to help find speakers. When I see someone or learn about someone or have conversations with someone who I think has what we're looking for in terms of the energy and enthusiasm, as well as, you know, willing to step up and help without selling things, without, you know, over promotion,
mm-hmm.
because this series is strictly about education. And so our volunteers are you know, volunteering to provide education to women. We use almost, you know, once in a while I've used a male, but he has to be, you know, again, fit in with what I'm looking for. But we use predominantly women for several reasons. One, I think it's important to know that there are women professionals that women can use. That I think also that we have women of all different ages that attend this, so it helps women understand that there's really, and that the world is their oyster, that they can do whatever they want, and that there's women out there doing it. And I think it's oftentimes women are, you know, these women are not intimidating, so that they feel open to be able to ask questions and engage and interact with the speakers. So, you know, I find them all over. I do try to mix up the speakers most of the time. So that, you know, number one, I don't overtax the professionals that I've used, but also so that often I get women who will repeat taking the series, so they don't necessarily want to hear the same speakers every time. So for that reason, too, because women often retake the program, I like to mix it up.
Well, the speakers were phenomenal, and they covered so many different areas. So we first started with talking about getting organized, goal setting, and designing spending plans. And I like that phrase, spending plans instead of budgets. People kind of get the cringe factor when they hear budget, but a spending plan. And so you can have a plan that takes into account your hard expenses, your fixed expenses, as well as discretionary spending. And then the following weeks cover things like banking and credit and debt management. So many helpful tips there. Give us a couple of tips around credit reports and improving your credit score, or just even becoming aware of what your credit report looks like.
Annualcreditreport.com. Pull your credit reports from all three bureaus at least every 12 months so you know what's in there. Not just because of what we do, but because there's identity theft. There's mistakes that are made by the credit bureaus or by people reporting the information. The only way, the government has given us our right to see these reports, but on that same note, we're now responsible to correct them. If they're not correct, that's our fault now because we have the right to check them, and we are able to dispute the information both to the credit bureau and to the person who provide, you know, the entity that provided it. That's our job. So the honest, you know, the burden is on us to make sure that our reports are accurate. And if we don't, that's our fault for not pulling them and making sure that they're accurate. And if not, then correcting them. So that's one big one is if you don't know. You know, the score is not as important as knowing what's in your report, because if what's in your report is accurate, your score is your score. But if you see that you have late pays or there's information that is negative information that should have fallen off or that's in there that's not yours, that's all correctable, and you can, you know, score, change your score by correcting information, you know, fairly rapidly. And if not, then it's about, you know, over the next couple of years learning, you know, making sure you're paying on time, paying more than the minimum. If you don't have credit, looking for things like secured credit cards or credit builder loans or things like that that are out there and available to people to help build or rebuild credit.
Fantastic. And the various classes or the topics, I should say, for the classes are online. I do want to give people the website so they can go there, look at the program overview, and consider participating in the St. Louis class, which comes up this fall, and that's extension.missouri.edu/WFES. So extension is spelled E-X-T-E-N-S-I-O-N, or you can Google the University of Missouri Extension Office, and there's a whole page dedicated to the Women Financial Series. So tell us also about the you know, with estate planning, I think this is so important, and there's an opportunity for people later this month, actually, to go to a workshop on that topic. But in the class with the Women Financial Series, we talked a lot about the importance of creating a simple will and having power of attorneys for health care. What are some of the things that can go wrong if you don't have a will in place or powers of attorney? I mean, those are two big subjects. Let's just talk about wills first. You know, what is the thing you've seen?
Well, I mean, actually, I can cover it all. It's just that families don't know what you want if you don't tell them and put it in writing. And the courts don't know what you want unless you put it in writing. And if you have nothing in writing, then the courts have to go by what Missouri law says, which is not often what we might do with our own family. So it turns out that it's much more costly for a family if you don't have documents, because then the family has to go to court, the lawyers cost more, they have to go back to court more, the courts have to appoint an attorney and executor in this Missouri, you know, it's called a personal representative. But it can actually be much more costly not to have those documents in place in terms of what gets left for your family than what it would cost to actually create the documents so that your family knows what they want. You help prevent, hopefully, animosity and fighting within the family by letting them know what your wishes are. Whether it's done through a will or a trust or a health care directive, that's all part of estate planning. Sometimes people will try to plan by just making all their accounts joint ownership, and I can't go into all of that today, but that provides its own perils, because if you're on a joint account with somebody that's not your spouse, then if they've got creditors, they can dip in and, you know, potentially garnish or get money out of that account. Or if there's a divorce that, you know, and somebody, you've got a child and they're going through a divorce and they're on your account with you, guess what? The money can be pulled in potentially as part of the divorce, I mean, at least in Missouri, because you're an owner. So there, you know, there, and then there's often things that get left out that people forget about. So having at least a simple will to say, if there's anything that I didn't cover, here's where it goes, is always a good thing. And here's something that people don't often know. When was the last time you checked with your employer to find out if you had any employee assistance program or something that might have access to being able to do a simple will or something like that? Many employers have these EAPs they work with, and a simple will might actually be something that they could do. Now, a lot of people, lives are more complicated. But again, paying, you know, $1,500 for a will, and it doesn't have to cost that much, I'm just saying, is not so expensive when you think of, well, my will is likely to last me, you know, 5-10 years. So if I paid $1,000 for a will, it's $100 a year, and what a gift to give to my family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't pay it off $100 a year, but think of it in those terms. You're not going to get a will done every year or a trust or these other documents. And so when you think of it that way, all of a sudden, you know, this is something that's going to last me a while. It's not as expensive as it appears to be.
Well, coming from a family where, you know, my mother did not have a will and she died suddenly in a car crash and there were six kids, you know, we had to, you know, just determine certain things between us, but it was definitely a challenge. And ironically, the day of the car crash, I got some will software in the mail, and, you know, I was 36 at the time. Not many people at 36 think about the importance of a will, but I encourage people of all ages to get one. You may have a stamp collection you got from your grandparents. You may have some kind of collection of something you may want to give to a certain person, but it's your chance to determine, and a lot of people through their jobs have life insurance, so it's really important to look that over and you know, make it reflect. It doesn't have to be that all your assets go to one person. You can leave a little bit to charity. I always like to say you're worth more dead than you are alive, and, you know, often on our passing, we can fund a charity that we maybe weren't able to fund to the level we wanted to while we were living. And, you know, there are people that have real estate that, you know, looks like a piece of empty farmland, but actually is very valuable, and they could leave part of that to charity as well. So there's all kinds of creative things to do. Find a lawyer. There's some great resources out there. Ask your friends who they've used, and get the advice that you need to set this up. So coming up on April 22 is a workshop on wills, trust, power of attorney, and probate. And it's not just for women, correct, Suzanne? Anyone can attend
Yes.
this workshop on April 22. So this is part of the Money Smart Week in St. Louis. Tell us about this workshop and tell us about what they'll learn by going to this class.
So this is a shorter workshop than you get through the women's series, but it's about an hour and a half at the St. Louis County Library headquarters on Lindbergh. And she'll touch on Dawn Christofferson, who's an estate planning attorney in the area. We'll touch on, you know, wills, trust, health care directives, powers of attorney, you know, the pros and cons of joint ownership, and just those are all things that are part of estate planning. And so there's only so much time, but of course there'll be some handouts and she'll, you know, at least be able to bring some understanding if people don't have it. And a lot of times people need to hear some of these things over and over again in order for them to sink in, and that's not unusual, especially if it's an area that is not your main focus. You know, I don't really know a whole lot about engineering, so if you were trying to teach me about engineering, I'd need to hear it multiple times. So if you're trying to teach someone who's, you know, in a different field something about estate planning, it's not unreasonable about anything financial to need to hear these things over and over again. So who've already gone to other classes or who've attended the same sort of session before who come again.
I love it. And I want to emphasize that even though it's free, people must register, and you can call 636-970-3000. That's the number for the University of Missouri Extension Office. Is that correct, Suzanne? Is that where they
yes,
register for the class?
Yes, or they can email me at gellmans, G-E-L-L-M-A-N-S, at Missouri, spelled out, .edu. And I can forward those emails, but yeah, we need to know who's there, and then also there's limited seating, so we need to make sure that we've
All
got
right.
that
so
covered.
Make sure you register for that class, and there's some other classes and other free programs during Money Smart Week. You can go to moneysmartstlouis.org. There's some really excellent resources there too, Money Smart Kids and a Smart Week calendar, and there's some really great articles and blogs posted there. Shout out to the sponsors of Money Smart Week, Citi and PNC Bank. Tell us a little bit about Money Smart Week, and have you participated in this in previous years, Suzanne?
Oh, every year. The Money Smart Week came out of a financial collaborative that we do with the United Way. So I have to say the United Way is one of the big pushes behind this, the United Way of Greater St. Louis. But there are hundreds of classes around the region being offered. For example, the first Saturday, which is the 18th, there are kids' reads at libraries all over the place where, you know, young kids can come and there's a book about money being read, and, you know, the first 15 or 20 kids may, you know, get one a copy of the book and a goodie bag. And we've got banks partnering to help, you know, read to the kids, banks and credit unions, I should say. And then there's also an event going on at the zoo that day, and I hope it's that day. I should have looked at that before, but it's on the calendar, but yes.
It's on the calendar.
Okay, so it is that day, right? They usually do it the first weekend. So it's at the zoo. There's all sorts of events for adults, and all week there's programs going on buying a house, on estate planning, on financial planning, on money management, on credit, on all sorts of different topics throughout the week. I know in St. Charles we're also doing a program on the the Affordable Health Care Act. There's an author who wrote The Ultimate Cheapskate that's going to be doing on the Sunday the 19th. He, at the Spencer Road Library in St. Peter's is going to be doing a talk on his book, or, you know, a general talk, and, you know, he's written various books. So there's all sorts of different events going on all week. There's also, we are not doing shredding out in St. Charles County, but some of the credit unions, I believe at least one of the schools, a lot of different organizations are doing shred events during the month and even into May, just FYI, for identity theft and getting rid of documents with personal information. The Attorney General's office is doing a shred event that week. So all of that can be, well, at least a bunch of different shred events should be able to be found as well on the Money Smart Week calendar.
Yeah, so I did see that. The shred event in St. Louis is at the Galleria, and it's on Saturday from 8 a.m. to noon, and that's really cool. I know I've tried to the 18th. I've tried to put my some of my documents in the fireplace, and you sit there for hours trying to burn things, and you know, you just can't shred all the things you need to shred, and you really only need to keep, what, the last 5 years?
Actually, it depends what you're talking about. If it's for tax purposes, it's, you know, we recommend really thinking of keeping stuff 7 to 10 years just in case, because even though at that point they have to provide it, I like having my own proof of things. But other than that, most things don't even need to be kept 5 years. It's until the statement hit that you know everything's accurate, or, you know, usually not more than a year unless it's something that, you know, divorce, marriage certificates, death certificates, military-related things. I mean, actually, that's something that people should know about, is we, on the University of Missouri Extension website, we, or, you know, in our materials, we do have information about how long to keep records. In fact, that's given out in the Women's Financial Series. I'd say, you know, 5 years, doesn't get at it. It's really tax documents that have to be kept that long, or personal things, or things that, you know, if you haven't ended the contract, any contract that's still in play needs to be kept as long as, you know, the contract hasn't been met, or, you know, if there's a warranty, those types of things. But otherwise, you know, a lot of things can be gotten rid of after a year or that long.
And I think a lot of people have old insurance policies where they've switched their car insurance or their home insurance, or they have, you know, proposals or quotes for work or home improvement or all kinds of different things, past payroll stubs, past jobs. I mean, God, it's scary how much paper I probably have that I need to purge. So I think I need to take advantage of that shred day. But what's amazing about this website for the Money Smart Week is that there's a map of the United States, and you get to pick your state. So we do have listeners in other parts of the country, so you can pick your state, see the events going on in your state, you can actually type in your zip code, and it will pull up all the events within a 25-mile radius of you, and you can look at all the different things. I'm sure, as Suzanne said, most communities will have a shred event. I think it's so neat that they're doing something for kids at the zoo. Yes.
Real quick, yes. So if they're national, then the website is moneysmartweek.org.
Okay.
It's the Chicago
MoneySmart
Fed is actually.
Oh,
right.
I see.
So if they're not in St. Louis, then the website is moneysmartweek.org.
Okay, moneysmartweek.org. That's so important. We're going to make sure we get that out on social media. And social media is a great place to also share information and tips and share YouTube videos and things like that. But through, you know, but also checking things out. Sometimes people read something on the internet and they think it's the gospel truth. Or there's a lot of investment schemes out there that people sometimes might get caught up in. Do you have any information on that, Suzanne, in terms of how to be cautious online and about offers of investment or?
I'm not sure if that is in fact, you know, one of the programs being offered. But the Missouri Attorney Generals and most states' Attorney Generals will have really good information about avoiding fraud and financial schemes on their website and in their information. The Federal Trade Commission has a lot of stuff on avoiding schemes and scams related to finances. Also, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Secretary of State's office in states, because like in Missouri, the Secretary of State's office actually oversees the, you know, financial advisors or financial entities in the state. So there are lots of different entities where you can find really good resources on avoiding schemes and scams related to financial things. But that does lead us to, as a reminder, that the Attorney General's office is doing a program in St. Charles County on identity theft. And then that same night, someone from University of Missouri Extension, they're doing a joint program avoiding contractor fraud. So avoiding contractor fraud and you know, trying to prevent identity theft.
Like everything you mentioned has affected me personally. I mean, speaking of contractor fraud, so many people will hire someone that they may know to do a project, and they think, well, they're saving money. They're not going through a big company or getting, paying a higher bid with maybe a company that's bonded and insured or listed with a Better Business Bureau. And so, you know, on two occasions we hired home contractors, one to lay concrete and one to do some work on our porch. One time the guy just took our deposit and disappeared, never came back. We could never reach him. Another time the guy started the job, never finished. I mean, he finally finished it, I should say, but he like was pouring concrete. And it was not poured correctly. He had to pull it all up. And he took the old concrete and just put it on the edge of our property in the woods where it was still visible, this pile of concrete. He didn't take it away. So there are so many things that can go wrong with these types of things. And so if you are planning a home improvement project and you're in the St. Louis area, there is this class on April 21 in the evening, 6 to 8:30, and that's something you might want to check out. Or check out the moneysmartweek.org for programs in your local community. So, Suzanne, what's coming up later in the year? I mean, what else is going on for you personally? Would you like to write a book? Do you want to, you know, get out and do more public speaking or coaching? I know you've mentioned you want to do one-on-one coaching. Tell us about that.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm just looking at, I think a lot of times people attend financial programs and they learn what they need to do but have difficulty implementing it. So I think that I'm looking at financial coaching as a way to help people who've been through the classes really be able to move forward in making some of the changes or implementing some of the tips or, you know, financial moves they've learned in the programs. Not doing it for them, but really just trying to help them, you know, you have somebody to be accountable to be, you know, sort of a cheerleader or, you know, continue to provide education, too, where they need it or resources or things like that, but definitely not doing it for them. They still have to do the work themselves, but I think sometimes we all just need a little bit of support especially in areas that are a little bit more intimidating or where we're just feeling like we don't have as much knowledge or strength. So that would be, you know, and if someone is looking for someone like that, also just be careful because there's no, anyone can hang up a shingle and say they're, I mean, I hate to say it, a coach in a variety of areas. There's not necessarily stringent guidelines on this, you know. So, but with me, you know, so it's, I right now I'm doing it with the women who go through the women's series who ask. And we'll see from there. I'm not sure what the future holds. So that's something I'm thinking about.
Well,
aren't we all?
I know you, I'd like to talk, too, about you had mentioned to be very cautious about using an insurance broker to be your financial advisor because they work on commission basis and things. They may not be totally unbiased. They may try to sell you insurance you may not really need. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, but that's true of any field, by the way. I mean, what I'd say is that you don't, no matter what financial advisor type of person or financial professional you're using, you need to do your due diligence. And don't just go with somebody who, you know, is a family friend or, you know, your best friend is using. You still need to do your research, and you need to interview different people and find somebody that's a good fit. And you need to ask them good questions like, you know, how do you get paid? And understand how, whether or not their interest is aligned with yours. Because if someone's working on a commission, then that's incentive for them to sell you. The more they sell you, the more they get paid. Or, you know, in some cases, if they're buying, you know, they only get paid if they buy and sell, then what is their incentive? Their incentive is to get you to buy and sell. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody that's working in that field works that way, but just knowing that that is a temptation, and so you really need to get to know and understand how this person works and whether or not they're working your best interest more in your best interest than their own. And there certainly are different fiduciary type or, you know, duties that you know, different financial professionals are under. So some have more stringent standards, you know, by law than others, and you just need to know, you know, is their duty to put your interest ahead of theirs, or is their duty simply to sell you something that is, I just lost my wording, that is, you know, acceptable, but there's a specific word, and it'll probably come to me when we're done talking. Is it suitable? Okay, is it simply suitable, or is it in, you know, absolutely putting your best interests ahead of theirs? And, you know, different occupation or, you know, different designations require different things. So knowing that, and just going in with your eyes open so that you know what to look for, and also not looking at your statements. Make sure you're looking at your statements, asking again a lot of questions. There's some really good lists of questions at various websites, like the Certified Financial Planner website. I believe there's information, you know, a lot of university extension websites. Missouri's not the only, I mean, most states have university extension attached to one of their local universities. It just varies by state. And a lot of times they have a lot of good, you know, information out there in all sorts of fields that's available. And in fact, a really good national site that connects you to extension across the country is extension.org. We call it e-extension, but it's just the word extension, like you spelled out extension.missouri. That with a national one's just extension.org.
Wow, that's a great, great tip. Okay. Well, and all of them you can Google, too, online. And so wherever you live, find out. There's so many free resources in the community. I think people forget about some of the things in their own backyard. I know just from taking the class, we talked about using the library more. I hadn't been in a couple of years, and I'd been buying books on Amazon and on my Kindle, and, you know, that adds up after a while, and it's sort of like invisible purchasing. You're just clicking a button, so you're not even pulling out your credit card. You're not pulling out cold, hard cash. You're just making a click decision, and eventually it could be $500 a year, $1,000 a year, and books that you could have borrowed easily from the library. So after taking the class, I marched right over to the library. I got a replacement library card because my card had been lost over the years, changing wallets. We all misplace those cards. And now they have these cute little cards that go on your keychain, so you'll never lose it. And I borrowed some DVDs and some movies and some books. And, you know, there's some great resources in our own backyard if people just take a few minutes to check that out, and also to get encouragement through classes like the Women Financial Series. And do want to give out that website one more time, extension.missouri.edu and then /WFES for information about that. Our guest today, Suzanne Gelman, who runs that program, is available to you also through email, and that's on that site to connect with her or Gelman, the letter S, G-E-L-L-M-A-N-S, at missouri.edu. You can send her an email. She is very accessible to help women especially get control of their finances and answer their questions. So, Suzanne, thank you so much. This has been fun. It went really fast. I know people are probably in the middle of tax season right now. Any final tips about filing your taxes on time and maybe anything people should know?
It's more about that the tax ID theft is increasing more and more. We had it actually happen to us last year. I've had a whole large group of people. One of the assistants in my office had it happen to her this year. It's just on the rise where people try to file a tax return before you do and get your refund, and then it just complicates things. So if that does happen to you, the IRS has a website, as does the FTC.gov. IRS.gov, FTC.gov, Federal Trade Commission, both of them have good information about what to do if that happens to you.
Fantastic. Well, that's a great tip, and we hope everyone gets through the next few days getting their taxes filed. And thanks again, Suzanne. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back next week on April 17th with Ellen Reed of The Turning Point and an author of a book called The House on Sunset. We'll be talking about sexual assault awareness, domestic violence, and violence against women. This is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we're going to be talking about a lot of important issues that maybe don't get discussed very often on the air. So stay tuned, and everyone have a great weekend. Thanks, Suzanne. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me.
All right. I'm going to end with a sponsor message from Modere.
Have you heard of Modere yet? Modere is a new online retail brand for today's modern shopper. We bring stylish, safe, exclusive products for everyday living. At Modere, things are different. We hold ourselves to a higher standard of being modern, accessible, and ahead of the curve. Modere offers ultra-premium products such as hair care, skin care, and household essentials at crazy affordable prices. Most importantly, Modere's products are safe and non-toxic. In fact, Modere makes some of the safest and most effective clean label products on the market today. With free shipping on most orders, a 30-day money-back guarantee on all products, and huge discounts for repeat customers, trying Modere truly is a win-win. Go to Modere.com right now. That's M-O-D-E-R-E.com. Again, that's M-O-D-E-R-E.com, and use the promo code THRIVE for savings up to $25 off your first order. Again, it's M-O-D-E-R-E.com, and use the promo code THRIVE. You'll love the free shipping and the big savings off all the products you desire for a modern life. Modere, we are stylish, safe, smart.